So I thought maybe with the week it's been, the whirlwind week, maybe we could just use a little lightening up this morning. So I'm going to continue from 2 Thursdays ago when I talked about the lighter side of Buddhist practice. So I call it just sit there. And technically, I think we're supposed to, end in like 10 minutes. So, but I'm a teacher in the Vipassana tradition, and we're the tradition, we're known as a tradition that is talkative. Joseph Goldstein used to say about his teacher Munindra, he'd talk until the last person left the room. I won't do that, but it's funny the way our tradition is. So, as a talkative tradition, a friend of mine is teaching a class, and he called it "The Dharma in a Nutshell, Part Two." And I gave him a hard time afterwards. I attended the class. It's not really the Dharma in a nutshell if there's a part two. I guess he had done part one the week before, sort of an oxymoron, like jumbo shrimp or civil war. It's like, but he's a Vipassana teacher. I'm on the board of the Rocky Mountain Eco Dharma Retreat Center. That's the name of our center. And I got outvoted. We had to make it a long name as we were mostly Vipassana teachers starting it. Rocky Mountain Eco Dharma Retreat Center. I mean, can't we just call it Eco Dharma or something like that? I mean, that's sort of like falling down a set of stairs. Rocky Mountain Eco Dharma Retreat Center. So I'll try to be brief. Forgive me, I'm a Vipassana teacher. So it's pretty amazing the way Vipassana is just kind of everywhere now. It started out, leaving the Buddhist tradition, being more secular in with mindfulness-based stress reduction and for people with chronic pain in hospital settings, medical settings, and then it's gone out into education, it's gone out into performance in sports and entertainment, it's business, government. I mean, it's even in the military now, sort of everywhere. And you can see this online. There actually is a mindful approach to poker, mindful poker. And I thought about it. Well, it kind of makes sense because, as meditators, we do sort of practice poker face, don't we? So, here's a Vipassana meditator being really pissed off. And here's a Vipassana meditator just falling deeply, madly in love. So I think we got the poker face down, but it's kind of a culture clash, isn't it? Poker and mindfulness. I mean, the Buddha was very clear about gambling is really not a very healthy way to make a living, but I'm sort of imagining the confluence of the two cultures, of poker mindfulness instructions. Are you maintaining full concentration and focus for the entire game? I invite you to taste the scotch, to savor that cigar, up the ante, roll the table. And feel your breath. It's just mindful poker. Who knew? So, and then again, with our practice, we can just let go. We have the luxury of being able to let go. Ah, okay, we can just let go. Back to the breath. Saved by the breath again. What a relief. It seems like it should be really easy. Just sit there, feel your breath. Notice your breath, like, be here now. That seems so easy. And oh my gosh, it's so hard, And like the Zen tradition has this beautiful kind of teaching of, just keep it very simple. When breathing, just breathe. When walking, just walk. When eating, just eat. And there's a funny story about this Zen master who started the Providence Zen Center in the 70s or 80s, Son Sanim. And, that was a big teaching of his, only, you know, only walk, only talk when talking. And so in the meditation center, Song Sanim was eating his breakfast and reading over a bowl of oatmeal or something. And one of the students came up and was sort of just horrified that his revered Zen master was not just eating, but also reading. And so he said, you know, Song Sanim, I'm so surprised. You're not just eating. You're only eating. You're eating and reading. And Song Sanim looked up and just without missing a beat said, well, when you eat and read, only eat and read. So, you know, our modern equivalent of that, you know, 30, 40 years later, when you eat and read and browse and text and ask Alexa to play the latest Billie Eilish, only eat and read and browse and text and ask Alexa to play the latest Billie Eilish. So, you know, it's no wonder our mind is so distractible. And it's kind of the first insight when we do sit down to pay attention to our breath. It's like, oh my gosh, my mind just boomerangs all over the place. And you think you're such a loser because you can't even do nothing. I mean, that's the instruction, right? Just sit there, do nothing. I can't even do that. Like, what a loser. Then you realize, okay, that's not helping. I think they call that judging, and you know, judging isn't helpful. And then you have this little insight, oh, wow, judging in our practice, it can't really work because when I'm judging myself, that's more distraction. So cool, judging can't work. What a relief. And so you're sitting there and you notice a breath, then you might notice another breath, and then, okay, your mind, but now you're having Dharma thoughts, not just thoughts, but Dharma thoughts. Those are the really juicy ones. Oh, I can just think about Dharma, right? And you remember, you know, Jack Kornfield says, train your mind the same way you train a puppy. Be patient, be consistent, and have some fun along the way. And I remember reading this one time, you know, Jack was talking about, you know, a puppy, you're trying to potty train a puppy. And so you want him to pee on the newspaper. So you put him on the newspaper, but of course, puppy wanders off and plays. So you just gently, you know, just like with a puppy, you're going to be very kind. You just bring the puppy back, put him on the newspaper. And then, you know, you're sitting there, you're remembering that. And then you have the insight, oh my God, that's the pee here now instruction. So cool. There really is some insight in this insight meditation. And then your mind, you know, you notice a breath or two, and then your mind wanders again. And you find yourself, you know, as a dude, you're speaking to an audience, and, you know, you find yourself saying in your mind, you know, okay, for the ladies in the house, let me tell you what mansplaining really is. And, you know, I had a male friend who told me that it's not mansplaining if you're right. You know, I don't think that's what mansplaining is. I think it's really when it's a dude telling a woman something she obviously already knows. It doesn't matter if you're right or not. I think that's mansplaining. But anyway, we'll leave it at that. Okay, phew, back to the breath. Phew. Boy, my mind goes places. Okay, saved by the breath. Once again, back to the breath. Yeah, and then you remember the instruction, another Dharma thought. Okay, yeah, meditation, it's easy. Just don't think, you know? We have this idea that we're not supposed to think, like that's what practice is about, which isn't really true. But anyway, in the beginning, we think that. And so, you know, that leads to the Buddhist compliment. I've never met anyone so thoughtless in my life. And, you know, there's lots of reasons our mind is so distractible. I mean, the human mind is just distractible, but I think it's safe to say the 21st century culture, we are the most distracted culture in the history of the planet, because now, like, we don't have any downtime ever where we can just be in our body, be in our senses. You know, even now they have gas TV. So you're at the gas station and, you know, there might be music blaring in the speakers in the, you know, the overhead roof. But there might also be TV in the gas pump, you know, God forbid the minute or two where, you know, where you're just waiting for your car to fill up. You don't have something to distract you or entertain you. So we need a little bit of compassion for this distractible mind in our because we're conditioning ourselves to be so distracted. We always need to be stimulated. This was in the News Digest the week back in 2014, July 2014. It was a bad week for staying connected after police arrested a burglary suspect who had logged into his Facebook profile during a break-in at a Minnesota home. Now, if that wasn't mindless enough, I mean, can you imagine, like, you're in a house, you're robbing someone's house. That doesn't hold your attention. I don't know what would. But, oh, you notice the computer system sleep mode. Cool, I'm going to log into Facebook. This is a true story. If that wasn't mindless enough, the robber left their Facebook page up on the screen. So that's how they got busted. World's dumbest criminal, said homeowner James Wood. Here's another true story. This is from the Bothell police in Bothell, Washington, October 11th, 2017. They had to send out one of those like Amber Alert texts, only this wasn't an Amber Alert text. This was a text to everybody from the emergency services. We will move mountains to help those in our community. However, we can't fix Facebook. So please don't call 911 to, quote, let us know it's down, end quote. So, you know, we are conditioning our minds to be so distracted all the time. Yes, we do mindfulness practice, but we also do as a culture a ton of mindlessness practice. It's gotten so bad, you know, can't know anything unless we go online. We've stopped reading books, you know, because the internet has everything. As a psychotherapist, I designed a test for internet addiction. And then I realized, of course, I have to put this test for internet addiction online. So I had to shorten the test quite a bit. If you're going on the internet to see if you're an internet addict, the test really only needs one question. Are you reading this question? If you are, I think it's safe to say you're an internet addict. Okay, back to the breath. Back to the breath. So again, mindfulness is everywhere. And you know, in this COVID time, our three refuges of Amazon, Zoom, and Netflix, now a new series on Netflix called A Guide to Meditation. It's the Headspace Guide to Meditation. 9 episodes. Wow, you can binge watch that. You know, you could stay up all night. Doesn't quite compare maybe to Game of Thrones or Homeland, but you can binge watch mindfulness now. And you know, mindfulness is on our phone. And a lot of people benefit a lot. I work with a lot of clients and students, you know, have really learned to meditate, you know, well with their apps on the phone. But again, similar to poker and mindfulness, it's a little bit a clash of cultures. You know, we're going to our weapons of mass distraction so we can learn how to not be distracted. And you put the two cultures together and you get, you know, kind of that instant results culture is, you know, let's see if I can just power this 30 minutes that in 10 minutes, you know, I can nail it in 10. And, you know, our culture has gotten so like instant everything. We brought that into mindfulness. There's a book now called 1 Minute Mindfulness, Simple Ways to Find Peace and Clarity. It's like, yeah, but just a minute, you know, if that's your only meditation, maybe you're going to nail your 1 minute sit in 10 seconds. So times are really different. When I learned to meditate back in the 80s, there were no sitting groups. There wasn't a Zoom, you know, thing you could check into every morning or even, you know, just in-person groups. I had to go on a 2.5 day retreat just to learn to meditate. So never mind a 1 minute meditation. I had to go for 2.5 days. And all I remember was knee pain. You know, it was miserable, but I had to go back. There was something in there for me for sure. You know, the teacher, she was pretty good. I think her name was the Pema Chodron. And, you know, she was fine, but all I remember was knee pain.